Hey guys, welcome to the Boning Soul Podcast. Thanks for joining me again. Okay, tomorrow, not tomorrow, 2 days, I'll be ETAR bound. Super excited about that. I'll be leaving on Wednesday. I'm actually recording this intro on the 24th of July. And if it sounds a little hollow and tinny, it's because I'm using a regular microphone on my computer here and on my headset. But anyway, super excited. I know some people are already out there, camping out. Today's Monday. They're already camping out, got their spots and stuff. I can't get away for an entire week. That's just not possible. But I'm leaving Wednesday, driving straight through, not straight through. I'm probably going to stop, obviously, sleep for a few hours. And getting there, I'm hoping to get there like Thursday morning-ish or maybe, before noon. That's ideal. I'm told that camping spots are going to be kind of far away, but that's okay. That's what I can manage. A lot of other people are getting there a little bit later anyway, so it'll be my first time. I'm super psyched. There's all kinds of people going. All of our, I know it sounds weird to say, but like internet friends that we've known each other for like years in some cases, but I've never actually met. We're actually going to go and, I'm actually going to get to meet some of these people from other, other podcasts, other channels, Facebook, all these, groups and things like that. So just super excited about it. I'm bringing my two of my bows. I'm bringing the ASL and the Elkhart. Again, I'm bringing them. I am bringing probably another bow to sell that I have. They're kind of lying around. It's an older one. If I get $50 for it, I'll probably be happy. Some other arrows. I think I'm bringing some climbing sticks too, to put on that trading blanket there that I hear about. So just to kind of get rid of some stuff and maybe partially pay for some of this trip. So anyway, super jazzed about that. Going to be really, really hot, but again, I'm just going to deal with it and getting all my camping gear together. I'm going to be in like a two-man tent basically with a sleeping pad and a sleeping bag. And I actually went and bought like a really cheesy, not even an Easy Up brand, Easy Up today. It's like a really small one because I realized I don't have any shelter from the sun if I go out there and hang out for a while. If I'm kind of hanging by my campsite and stuff. So anyway, just last minute preparations, and I'm really excited to go. So with that said, so this week's episode. I got a guy by the name of Ryan Lehman. He is in Missouri, and just like most other guests I have on the show, I started watching his YouTube channel. It's called Hunting the Missouri. Cool guy, been hunting for a long time. Very, very successful. Just does stuff the right way. Just really cool to get to know him, right? I wish again add him to the list of people that I would like to probably meet in person if I could, just because this podcast has allowed me to just reach out and make contacts and friends with so many other people that normally I wouldn't get a chance to do because we're all like-minded and things like that. So every guest I have on here I'm really grateful for. So thank you, Ryan, for being on. So anyway, I really don't have a lot much more to say really, other than ETAR preparations. Like I said, leaving Wednesday morning, probably head out like early Sunday morning, just because I got like an 18-hour drive, plus I lose an hour, so it'll be almost as long within an hour, let's say, of my last trip down to Georgia when I drove down and back, and that was pretty long. So then I got to get back to work and do more, summer, family responsibilities and stuff. So, looking really, really forward to that. So, anyway, haven't been doing a ton of shooting lately. Just a few mornings here and there, and everything is just so dialed in, and I'm just so ready for hunting season. To be honest, I'm really, really excited about that. Just looking to get out just, I don't know, just walk around with a bow in my hand again. It's going to be fun. So anywho, that's it. Obviously, please, check out some partners of the podcast, the Push Archery Center of Knowledge. Awesome courses out there, great stuff out there. Check out all their hip quivers and things like that too, like the hip quiver. They've got I think it's called the Ridge Runner. I don't have that one, but lots of cool stuff, lots of cool merch. Go check out those guys. Obviously, they're kind of like a giant in the industry here. So and of course, check out Hiko Ito Knives. Like I said, I used that one knife that he sent me, the EDC Skinner Light, to process and butcher my pig, and it worked fine. For like I said, I had kind of not doubts, but kind of doubt, about how it would. Here we go. Cool. Okay. So, Ryan Lehman, welcome to the Boning Soul Podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Awesome. Thank you. Glad to be here, and it's an honor, and thank you for having me on.
No problem. I really appreciate this. You literally got home like, what, 15 minutes ago, 10 minutes ago, something like that. So it's good that we're both on Central Time and we're able to do this. When you said, hey, I want to, you know, I can't do it any earlier than like quarter to 10, 10. I'm like, sweet, we're there. That's kind of a rarity.
Yeah, it worked out perfect.
So you and I literally talked for like 2 minutes before we started recording this. But, you know, I was telling you, I recently started following you on YouTube. And you have a channel called Hunting the Missouri, right?
That's correct.
And of course, just in my desire to just kind of take in any kind of, you know, traditional content or any kind of hunting content, you know, you came up, I started watching, you know, I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. And it seems like you've had this this journey relatively, I guess, in the past 2 years, you know, judging by your just the videos that you have out there and the age of them, you made a switch from, you know, shooting a compound to shooting traditional. I don't know if you just, you know, solely traditional or not, but I really wanted to get into kind of like your hunting history, you know, why you made the switch, and then, you know, the things you learned, how you learned, just kind of geek out over like your kind of path, you know, if you're good with that.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I grew up in Florida, and I was about 6 years old. We moved to a little place called Weewahatchee, Florida, and it's a little one red light town. Everybody hunts and fishes, and like everybody knows everybody. So whenever we moved there, you know, we had never really hunted or wasn't much into the outdoors other than like fishing. So when we got there, you know, we wanted to get into hunting and fishing. So when I was 7 years old, I actually got my first bow, and I actually started shooting then. My dad already had one. He had a recurve, and so that was the bow that I learned on. So at 7 years old, started shooting the bow, and then also got my first gun at seven. So, you know, started small game hunting, and then, you know, the progression just went on from there. And at 10 years old, I killed my first deer with a firearm, so that was awesome. And then by the time I turned 12 years old, I was finally strong enough to pull, you know, hunting weight. So I was shooting 43 pounds and started shooting a compound and started hunting at 12 years old, and then, you know, killed my first one with a bow at 13.
Wow.
Started out, and then the journey kept on from there. In 2005, I believe it was, my dad and I, you know, my family is really supportive, and, you know, my dad, he's a big time hunter. You know, he got into hunting the same time I did. And we went on our first out of state trip. We actually went to Wisconsin. And when we were up there, that's kind of where my itch for the traditional started. There was a guy up there by the name of Nate. He's a big time traditional bow hunter. He hunts with a recurve, and just at the hunting camp, talking with him and seeing pictures, like he'd killed, you know, a monster, like double drop time. He'd killed like some big deer, like 300 pounds. And at that, you know, young age, I was just like, oh my goodness. And I was like, I'll never be able to do that. Like, to have the discipline to shoot a deer, you know, 20 yards and in, like, I want to shoot a compound. Like, I'll never switch. But, you know, it just kept on from there. And, you know, I kept hunting with a compound and a rifle and was pretty successful. You know, my dad and I, we've hunted out west, went after elk and mule deer and been successful there. And through the years, I ended up meeting Harmon Carson, which you know who that is.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I think he's on the show early on. He actually has a taxidermy shop, and I got into doing taxidermy, and me and him were on one of the same pages. So that's kind of how I learned about him, was taxidermy. And then I seen some of his hunting videos. And then, you know, just talking to him, he's become one of my really, really good buddies. Like, we talk multiple times a week. And, you know, I started picking his brain and told him, man, like, I think I might do it and make the switch. He's like, yeah, absolutely, man, you need to do it. And so at that point, we, you know, just started talking, and I picked his brain on what he thought I needed to do, and, you know, from the arrows to the bow and all that. And, you know, I just made that switch, and I'd always wanted to, but I just never was taking the jump. And I finally decided to sell my compound bow because I was like, man, if I have this bow, like I'm only going to hunt with that bow. So I've got to get rid of that bow. And so I sold that 2 years ago and then, you know, started hunting with the longbow there.
So you full on just said, you know, I'm just going to make like the full on plunge, right? No temptation kind of thing. And yeah, Harmon was on, it's been a few years now. He doesn't post a whole lot anymore on social. He used to be on social a whole lot more, you know? But he doesn't post that much. And I remember when he was on, it was like, I don't know if it's still the case or whatever. Like, he was like living like way out in the boondocks or whatever. And like the coverage wasn't all that great, you know, for cell coverage and stuff. So yeah, we were having a hard time, hooking up, but, that's quite a mentor to have though, you know, for a guy. Cause he kills a lot of stuff, that guy. So.
Oh yeah. He's a straight up killer. That's for sure. And that's what I want to do is, you know, surround myself with somebody who's been really successful and been in the shoes. And I know he had made the jump, you know, a lot longer. I think he's been doing it close to 15 years now.
Yeah.
I just kind of got under his wing and kind of followed under what he thought and recommended, you know.
So I want to back up just a little bit here. So when you guys were in Florida, he had relatively early success as a younger kid and stuff. Are you guys on public? Are you on private? Like what's that scene like for you? And you know, how are you learning to be a, you know, hunter, woodsman?
Yeah. So I probably 99% of the time hunt public land, and growing up down there, my family, we didn't own any farms or property or anything like that. And I didn't really have access to private. So actually my first experience of hunting was hunting public land, and down there, it was a lot of fun because we had the Apalachicola National Forest down there. And it's legal to hunt with dogs in Florida. Mm-hmm. So that's how I actually like grew up, was hunting with dogs. You know, a bunch of my buddies would have just different packs of dogs, and we would actually run deer and, you know, have, instead of like a deer drive, you have the dogs that are doing it. And we did it out of a boat because we're hunting on the river a lot. So, you know, I grew up on the river, you know, deer hunting and hog hunting. And it was just a lot of fun. And just great experience and like the best memories made, you know.
That's the first I've heard, like those two mixed. I know like, you know, hunting with dogs down there is really, really popular. It's a thing. That's just a whole other culture, right? That like most hunters in this country like don't understand. And like, I don't either. Like, it's not my thing. You know what I mean? But yeah. I know it's like so ingrained down there. So how does that work on a boat? I'm trying to, I don't see the meshing of the boat and the dogs there. What do you just kind of like go up this, you know, follow the riverbank kind of thing as the dogs are on land, or what does that work?
Yeah, it was really cool. So the way we did it, a lot of the guys down there actually have what's called a houseboat. So these houseboats, they build, basically it's like a big shed, you know, it might be 20 feet wide by 50 foot long. And they would actually, it was like a camp, but it floated because it was on water. They had it on these big styrofoam, basically pylons or floats.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and what they would do is they would, a lot of times, build them at the boat ramp, and then, you know, take multiple boats and you just push that houseboat down the river. And once you get where you want to set up, they would just tie and stake that houseboat off to the bank. And then a lot of times they would go up and put, their dog houses and barrels on the bank and actually, you know, have a camp right down the river. And so with that, we had different hunting groups. Most of the time, you know, you'd have, back in the day, you know, we would have 20 or 30 guys out there, and we would all use VHF radios. That way you could communicate. And so we would kind of plan it out. So there's different river, like, you know, the main river, and then there's different sloughs. And, you know, the forest down there is like 500,000 acres. So it's just tons and tons of property, and it's all public. So what we would do is plan. You'd have some guys go down different sloughs to kind of cut the deer off, to where like you basically surround this block or this area you're going to be hunting. And what you would do is turn the dogs loose. So you'd have the boat, and usually they would have a chain, and, you know, obviously have their, you know, pack of dogs. And a lot of times they'll run four or five to a pack. And some of my buddies would have, you know, anywhere from, you know, some of them would have five dogs, some of them would have 25 dogs. And so the idea behind that, you know, you can go multiple days. So, you know, Thanksgiving weekend, it'd be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, you know, they would run one or two packs on Thursday and then run another pack or two on Friday and then Saturday, Sunday. And then that way you always had fresh dogs. And so all the hunters would get out and, you know, you would basically turn the dogs loose on the bank. They would start sniffing around, find the deer tracks, and they would just, you know, once they jump, they just take off running. And, you know, you're waiting for a buck, basically. Sometimes they'd be running does, so you'd pull the dogs off and try to find a buck track, you know.
No kidding. So then, like, when they run them, are they, like, running them, like, from inland towards shore? And, you know, like, you're shooting them from the boat? Or you're just, like, use the boat to get to, like, a different point of that land, and then they push towards you? I'm fascinated by this.
Yeah. So it was really cool. So what we would do is basically you're using the boat as transportation. So obviously we all have VHF radios, and the dogs, you know, would have GPS trackers on them. So you can actually look and see where the dogs are at and what direction they're running. And so we would all be on the same channel and be like, hey, like the dogs are running north, or, you know, they'd be running, and then, you know, the deer would run by somebody, and if they shot the deer, killed it, it was awesome, that was the idea. But if they didn't, like, oh, there's a big buck, he's heading north, and you could hear the dogs and you could see what way north was, look at your compass. And so, like, hopefully there was other shooters that were already back to the north. If there wasn't, a lot of guys who were way back to the south, they might go jump in their boat and ride up the river and, like, get out real quick and try to run into the woods and cut those deer off.
That's quite cool. An undertaking. I mean, that's a lot of coordination.
Oh, absolutely. And it was pretty cool because, you know, sometimes those deer, you would think they would just be running and running, but those deer would run. And then I've had deer run up and stop 10 foot from me and turn around and look back at the dogs. And they just wait till those dogs, you get about 15 yards from them. And that deer's, you know, a minute and a half in front of those dogs. And then the deer would take off running, and then they'd just stop, or they'd make a big loop. And it's cool.
Interesting.
Yeah, and that was for the deer. And then obviously we did it with hogs too.
Yeah.
You know, so generally if we're running deer, we're running beagles or walkers or just a beagle walker mix. And then if, you know, we had hog dogs or whatever, a lot of times they were like black mouth curs. And then you would obviously have like your pit bulls as your catch dog. So you'd have a bay dog and then a catch dog. So it just depended on, you know, who was out there hunting and what dogs we had and what kind of, if we were hunting deer, hunting hogs, or what was going on.
That is so strange. That's just so foreign to me. You know, how was that like? I guess a lot of us like kind of think of hunting as mostly like a solitary kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're alone in the woods or maybe with a buddy or something like that, but like you're pretty much on your own. But I mean, it seems like that many people, I don't know. I mean, it's, I guess I can see it both ways. You know what I mean? It's kind of like what deer camp is up north kind of thing, right? Where, and it's usually during rifle season, but I mean, it's a camp thing. Other people are there. It's a whole event, which is totally different than like 99% of the hunting that I normally do, which is like by myself walking around. Right. So, which do you prefer? I mean, do you miss that? I'm guessing you still don't do that in Missouri, but.
No, I do miss it. Obviously bow hunting is my passion. And that's what my main focus and my main love is, you know, it's really cool being able to go out there just by yourself, but I do enjoy having, you know, people with me. You know, my dad and I are like, we're best friends, you know, and it's always enjoyable whenever we get to go out and, you know, one of us is successful, or even if we're not, just being with the other person or being able to text them and be like, oh, hey, have you seen anything? And, you know, just both ways are good. You know, a lot of times I'll hunt by myself if he's busy, but, you know, other times I'll take people with me as well. I've got a buddy of mine named Mark. He goes with me sometimes. And, you know, if you watch any of my channel, like you'll see my dad on there sometimes and my buddy Mark is on there. But yeah, I mean, I like to bow hunt. That's my main thing. I mean, I do enjoy firearm hunting, but the bow is, you know, nothing like shooting a deer with a bow.
Yeah. So when did the move to Missouri come then?
So I graduated high school, and then when that happened, that was 2009. I did go to Gulf Coast Community College there in Panama City for a year. And then 2010, I actually transferred and I went to a Bible college up here in Missouri.
Okay.
In 2010. And then at that point, you know, I started hunting in Missouri. And after I graduated college, I moved down to Texas. And my wife is from Texas. I'm from Texas. We were actually youth pastors at a church there for a while. And then we actually went back to Florida. So in 2015, we got married. And then 2016, we moved to Florida. And we were there for 4 years. While we were there, I know you'd ask about, you know, public land or private land. I mainly hunted public, but my wife, she wanted to hunt as well. So we did get in a hunting lease down there. And so a lot of times they'll have timber companies. So there was 5,000 acres that we were a lease members on. And we actually had, I think there was 9 members. So what we did is split that all up. So we had, you know, several hundred acres to ourselves.
Yeah.
And so we did that and, you know, was successful, you know, killed. I think I've got a doe on there from Florida that I'd killed. I killed a nice 8-point down there and I didn't have it on film. But then in 2020 is when we moved here to Missouri and I was successful my first year. And that's kind of when the transition happened, you know, talking to Harmon and because I debated on switching in 2009. And then in 2020, when we were up here, you know, the deer are a lot bigger and it seems like the deer aren't as jumpy as they are in the South. Obviously, you have a lot smaller target for a deer, you know,
mm-hmm.
where a deer might weigh 100 pounds down there, 120 pounds, where up here, you know, they might be 220. So right. I was like, well, I might as well start with the deer in Missouri, traditional bow hunting, because the deer are just so much bigger. And, you know, obviously I've got a chance at killing a really good buck and I would really like to do that. So.
Interesting. And bigger target too.
Yeah, exactly.
So less to miss.
Exactly. So, and, 2020, when we were up here, my first year, it was crazy. You know, you had all the COVID stuff going on and, believe it or not, on the public, I didn't see one hunter during the hunting season. Nobody walked by me. I didn't walk by anybody, but we're hunting by boat, as you know. So the little boat we have is like a 13-foot boat with a 25 Tatsu on it. It's only like 4 foot wide, but we can get on some big rivers, but also get up into some sloughs and fingers and stuff like that. But we, the first year, I actually seen 8, what I would consider 8 mature shooter bucks. So
wow.
And that's, you know, I killed that. There's a 10-point I killed with a rifle. That was a really good deer. And then I had some close encounters with other deer. And so I had I killed a doe with my bow. I shot her at, I think it was like 10 yards. And then I shot an 8-point at like 10 yards, but I backstrapped him. And unfortunately, you know, I didn't settle my pin, even though I had a compound at the time. As soon as I seen brown, like I was just trying to rush and kind of freaked out and just punched the trigger. And I didn't settle my pin. I should have aimed low. And, you know, I just took the hair off the top of his back. Obviously I didn't find that deer.
Yeah.
I watched him run off. I mean, there was like no blood. It was just hair. And, you know, that happened. Then I was at full draw on a big buck and then I killed that 10 point. And so because of those, 3 encounters or 4 encounters with deer all at 10 yards. I was like, man, like I really should switch to traditional. And then the late in the season, I was out again and I had like 4 or 5 deer come in at less than 20 yards. And at that time I was like, man, I wish I had a long bow or a recurve. And I'm like, I'm done. And that was my point. At that point, whenever you've got a deer within 20 yards of you and you don't want to shoot it with a compound, I knew it was time to switch.
Yeah, because you've already proven to yourself that, hey, I can get this close, you know, and then it just almost seems like a, you know, too much of a chip shot.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Not that it's, you know, I don't mind if people hunt with a a compound. I mean, that's up to them, but just for me, like, and I don't mind, like, I love deer meat and love eating deer and all that. So I'll still firearm hunt, but just during the archery season.
Yeah, same.
I want to have that traditional bow in my hand.
Yeah. So when you decided to make the switch, right? Mm-hmm. You're obviously in contact with Harmon. I'm sure, you know, like where else did you get kind of, I don't know, like tutoring or, you know, what kind of, you know, like, you know, kind of pushed you in one direction or another and where'd you get it? Where'd you seek advice before you dove in and bought a bow or did you just dive in and buy a bow?
Yeah. So one of my jobs, I actually work at Cabela's. I work in a bow shop. So through the years, like I've actually worked at Bass Pro and Cabela's. I have a combined time of about 8 years. So I've actually worked in bow shops for like 8 years. Mm-hmm. So I've been around, you know, longbows. I've been around recurves and stuff. I had the recurve and, you know, I'd got a new string on it, got some arrows and started shooting and practicing. And, you know, there's so many guys out there on YouTube that are so good to watch. Obviously, you know, we talked about Harmon's channel, but I was watching some of him.
Yep.
You know, I know there's multiple people, like I was looking through a list of people that you've actually interviewed. I watched some of like the Ranch Fairy. I watched some of his stuff as far as like tuning a recurve or a longbow, like, you know, just bear shaft tuning. So
yeah,
kind of got into that. And
what was that first bow?
So my first bow, it's old. I don't even know how old it is. I think it's probably got to be close to 60 years old, if not older than that. So my dad got that when he was a teenager. I think my grandpa had bought it from him at a yard sale. And so that's the bow I'm actually going to be hunting with this year. But it's called the, it's a Pro Line out of Hastings, Michigan.
Okay.
It's called the Participant. So it's
never heard of that.
Yeah, it's a Pro Line. It's out, like I said, Pro Line, Hastings, Michigan. It says that right on the inside of the limb. And it's the Participant is the name of it. It's a 48 pound recurve. It's a one piece bow. It's got, green on the belly of the bow is like the green color, and then it's kind of just like a kind of like a dark, it's not like Osage, but it's a darker kind of like a brownish dark wood on the other side. And but I mean, it's a really nice shooting bow. Like I said, I mean, I think, I don't know, I haven't done a whole lot of research on that bow, but that bow has to be, you know, 60 plus years old.
Yeah. So does your dad still shoot traditional too? Did he stick with traditional the whole time or?
No, my dad doesn't. He actually hunts with compound. You know, he's shot traditional, but I guess he never just really got the hang of it.
Oh, okay. Okay. I thought he was like, that was his thing when he was, you know, when he said when you were younger. So
yeah, that's how I learned.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So he had that bow and I kind of shot it and then, there was some people who went to our church. They actually had like compound bows. So my first compound I had was I think it was a PSE Bandit was the name of that bow, but that was a good little compound bow. But
yeah,
like I said, you know, the bow now that I'm shooting is that, Pro Line.
Gotcha. And that's just what you're going to stick with this season. So you pick it up. And what's the learning curve like? I mean, because you've had some like really good success in a very short amount of time. So, how did that go for you? Were you natural at it? Did you have to, you know, just walk through that?
Yeah, it came pretty natural. I'm actually an instinctive shooter, so you know, I think it really helped me a lot as a young kid. The first bow that I had, you know, even though. You know, I shot around with that recurve a little bit, even though it was way too much pounds. Mm-hmm. Once I did get a compound, you know, there wasn't any sights on it or anything. So I was shooting by like instinct. So I learned like instinctive and, you know, that's the way I still shoot today. And, you know, a lot of times I'll explain it to people. You know, I used to play baseball when I was in high school. I was a pitcher and I also played third base. And, you know, if I'm on the mound, you know, somebody hits me the ball or throws it to me and I throw it to first base, I just look at first base and throw the ball, and it basically like hits him in the chest right where I'm aiming. Right. But if I go over there to third base, I'm on the back grass, you know, way across the diamond. When I throw it, I don't think about it. I just throw it, and the ball hits where I'm supposed to. I'm throwing the ball harder and higher, and it has the drop. But it's kind of the same thing. It just comes natural. You know, I basically look at my target and just burn a hole in where I want to hit. I draw back and hit my anchor, you know, right at the corner of my mouth. You know, I guess I'm not really paying attention to my point, but I guess just my peripheral vision just kind of automatically does the calculations and, you know, either aims higher or aims lower. But, you know, I'm not focusing on that. I'm just paying attention to where I'm trying to hit and, you know, just trying to make sure I hit all the way to full expanded. And once I hit my anchor and I've focused on that, I just let, you know, that release go. And whenever I do, it, you know, hits where I'm aiming.
God, I envy guys like you, because I've tried to do, you know, more instinctive, and I can't, you know. And you know, the closest I get is, you know, like gap instinctive, you know, sight picture kind of thing. But like the pure, you know, just only, you know, bore a hole, pick a spot kind of thing, I mean, I just, it doesn't work for me. But so I'm sure that really helps. Like I think some people are more prone to just to learning that kind of stuff, you know, more so than others, right? And if you have it in you to do that, or if your mind works better that way, I think the learning curve, my opinion is that you're going to get, you know, a lot farther along, a lot quicker on that learning curve than someone who is like struggling and then figuring out, okay, do I aim? Do I do gap? Do I do face walking? Do I do crawls? Do I do that? You know what I mean? And I've tried them all. So I guess consider yourself lucky, that you can do that, because I can't do that.
Right. And that's one thing too, that, you know, whenever I first started, I kind of debated on like, all right, what's my shooting methods going to be? Like, how am I going to get and pick this up? And as you know, the push, they have the push film, their first one they came out with. And I watched that. I know it's like 2 hours long, but I've watched that film multiple times. And I'm like, okay, well, like, you know, because when I first started, I wasn't like super good, or my groups weren't great. And I was like, well, maybe if I do try gap shooting or string walking, maybe my groups would get better. And, you know, I would, you know, put those knocks on there and try that. And it just, for me, it just didn't work. I mean, my groups weren't any tighter or any better shooting that way than they were by just instinctive shooting. So at that point, you know, I just kept shooting and shooting, and my groups got a little tighter. And I started out close, you know, 7, 8 yards, 10 yards. And I would just shoot and shoot until, you know, I got better and better. And, you know, I shoot a 5.5-inch turkey feather. I talked to Harmon, and I'm like, man, should I go like with 4-inch, or should I go with 5-inch, 5.5? Like, what should I do? And he told me, you know, the longer that those feathers are, the more it's going to correct that arrow. And it's obviously going to be a little bit louder or noisier as in flight. But he's like, starting out, he said, I would go with longer because it's going to help your shooting. So that's what I did. And I was shooting with, you know, split fingers or whatever. I had one finger above and two fingers below. And I think I was just getting some like knock pinch, and just, you know, when I would release that string, it just didn't relax or release real well. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was shooting with a glove. And so I was like, man, like, I want to try something different. So I ordered, you know, multiple. I think I ordered like 3 or 4 different finger tabs off of Amazon.
Yeah.
When I got all those tabs, you know, I would try it. And then, you know, at that point, I, you know, tried 3 fingers below. And then that's when I decided to do away with the glove. And I strictly went to the tab and went to, you know, shooting 3 fingers below. And for me, it just allowed the string to just, the relief and transition to come off smoother. And I noticed my groups began to get tighter and tighter. So at that point, it's like, all right, this is what's working good. This is how I'm shooting the best. Like, this is what I'm going to do and stick with and just go with it.
I found the same thing with, that's also another thing I've tried that I just can't do is, you know, split finger. It just feels weird, even on like a longer, like even on my ASL, right? That's a 66 inch bow. Shouldn't be any like finger pinch and stuff, but I've tried shooting it like split finger just to see what it feels like. And my index finger, the top one, as soon as I feel it kind of like, start to get encapsulated by the string on the top end, and then like the arrow on the bottom, it just feels weird, right? I feel like it's gonna pinch, and it just throws my mind off, and I'm like, no, this doesn't feel right, and I can't do it. So I've tried, but no, 300 for me, and you know, just a tab. And I do like a weird thing with my tab too. Somebody was commented the other day, like, oh, it looks like you got your tab upside down, but it looks like it's a split finger tab for a lefty and whatever. So for some reason, I don't know why, I think I split my tab, not like, I don't choose to play for, obviously I shoot 3 under, but I split my 3 under tab with between my middle finger and my ring finger. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's almost like it's a split finger tab that's upside down.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it just because it kind of bends there a little bit, and right. You know, and I have like I'm looking at my finger right now. My calluses, my hardest callus is on like the top part of my ring finger. Now that's the one that's supposed to not have hardly any pressure on it at all, right?
Yeah.
But okay. I put way too much pressure on my bottom finger, and that's like I got a hard callus on it, where like the middle finger really ought to do that. So I don't know. I think I ended up with that slit in there because I had a split finger tab, and I don't know why I was gonna split it, but you know when you screw up and you cut, like you put one on top of the other, like face to face instead of front to back, you know what I mean? And right. Then you make the split and you're like, oh crap, it came out like upside down and backwards kind of thing. So then I just started shooting that way, and then I stuck with it. So now all my tabs have that little slit in it that's between my middle finger and my ring finger, and it serves no purpose. Like there's no string that goes in there. It just kind of bends a little more there, and it just kind of feels better in my hand. So I mean, we all have our little kind of quirks or whatever that make us happy, you know what I mean? Like mentally, right. Like, oh, this is the way it should be, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
When you're on, what, you don't have to say exactly where you hunt, but I mean, what part of the state are you in Missouri?
I honestly hunt all over the place in Missouri. So I live, basically right here close to St. Louis.
Is where, okay.
So with that being said, obviously you've got the big city. So the closer you are to the city, it seems like it's harder to find spots that people aren't already hunting, or, you know, basically because, you know, everybody from the city is trying to get out there. So, you know, just kind of separating yourself and finding those like hard to get to or those overlooked spots can be very difficult. So a lot of times, you know, I might be hunting like an hour from the house or 45 minutes from the house. But, you know, I've also got up on a Saturday morning and left my house at like 3:30 in the morning to drive and to go, you know, two hours or 2.5 hours away. And then, you know, basically get there, put the boat in, you know, go out and basically just run and gun style and, you know, kind of scout your way in and hunt, set up and, you know, hunt all day and then turn around and drive a couple hours back home.
Yeah, that's that takes some. Is there a lot of public land though in Missouri? I mean, is it from what I understand, like there is, but it's like a lot of people, you know, and I don't know whether it was like during COVID and everyone was out or not, you know, but
yeah, I mean, I could see that both ways. I think in the last 3 years, I think we've actually hunted, I think, like 13 different pieces of public. So, you know, we'll hunt, you know, WMA, like wildlife management areas, or we'll hunt like Corps of Engineer properties, just like basically get on Onyx and see, you know, what's far away from a city or where can I get, or, you know, if I go there by truck, like how far or how hard of a walk is it going to be to get like way deep back in the back, or, you know, if I go in on the river, or go in on a lake, or go hunt islands, you know, just trying to find those hard to get to spots that, you know, to me isn't necessarily hard to get to, because that's how I've grown up hunting, is on the river or hunting lakes and hunting islands and different things like that. So like that's what I'm used to, so I don't think nothing about, you know, loading up the the boat and going out and hunting on the river. Like, I love
it. Yeah, that's normal for you, yeah.
Yeah, that's my favorite kind of hunting, so.
Do you normally try to get to places with a boat, or like when you're going out public, right? Do you plan on like, okay, I'm going to access this with a boat, or do you specifically seek those pieces out, or is it just like, hey, I feel like hunting this particular spot today, I'm gonna go, you know, access it by boat because that's the best way to access.
Yeah, I prefer hunting by boat. So like, I'll get on like Onyx, and like, I might be laying in bed looking at the weather and seeing like, all right, what's the weather doing? What way is the wind blowing tomorrow? And then depending on what the wind is doing, you know, if I've got a north wind, I might go hunt somewhere different than I would if there's like a west wind or something like that, just depending on, you know, how the layout of that public is.
Right.
So
are you able to cut off a lot of other, like, I mean, the whole point of that is to kind of get to the backside of, at least around here anyway. Like, I don't hunt on the water. I don't feel like super comfortable on the water. I don't know what it is. It's just a mental thing for me. Right. But, yeah. Like I'll go like waterfowl hunting on my buddy's boat, but that's about it. Right. Like, I would never, I'm not one that's like, hey, I'm going to get a boat and, run these river systems or whatever, just to get to the backside of whatever. But that's what they're used for here. And you know, you could walk in like, you know, a mile and a half, you know, in one direction from the parking lot, or you know, you trudge all this way in, and then like, you know, you get to kind of the other side of whatever this piece is, and then you hear like a boat coming up, and they just pretty much pull up there and like walk up the hill. you know, and they've cut a lot of time out. But you know, and kudos to them, whatever, that's what they want to do. But is that the way you're doing it too, just to kind of get like to the backside of like instead of walking in deep, you just kind of go around to the backside where, you know, you would have walked in deep, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I know one area that I do hunt, depending on the water level. But like I said earlier, our boat is like pretty small. It's like 13 foot long and it's like 4 foot wide. So most people up here have boats that are like 17 foot and they're like 5.5, 6 foot wide. And most of them are running like, you know, 50 or 60 horse motors, where ours is just a small, like 25. So okay. Because of how small our boat is, like we can squeeze in places, like, you know, go through like little rock levees or go between trees or go between like pylons and be able to get around. So like, you know, there's one area that I actually squeezed through and went back, and I got probably 3/4 of a mile back. And obviously, like, there's no other boats that have been back in there. The only way somebody could do that is if they like brought a kayak on their big boat and like boated in and then parked their boat and got out in a kayak to go through because the boat is too big. So I'm able to like slip in on this backside, and like there's no sign of human activity. There's like no boot prints or there's no boat skid marks on the bank. So like, you know, I can ride around on that backside in the boat and get 3/4 of a mile back, where the only way you can get there is if you walk there or if you have a little boat like that.
Yeah.
And what I'll do a lot of times, I don't mind and walking 3/4 of a mile back. If I can hunt 150 yards or 100 yards off of the river, like right there, you know, I'm not putting my scent everywhere. And so, like, a lot of times, like, if I'm hunting close to the river like that, the deer isn't going to get on my scent trail. So I might hunt a trail that's, you know, 10, 15 yards from me. But, you know, the deer is never going to catch my scent just based on the wind and based on where the river is or where the slough is that I'm parked at, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. When you're going in, are you typically hunting by yourself? Cause you say we a lot, and I know you kind of hunt with your dad and stuff a lot too. Are you kind of more solo, or do you have like, hunting partners, or do you prefer hunting partners?
Yeah. We do hunt together quite a bit. Generally I'll have my own spot. So like, we'll go in and we'll scout together and figure out like, all right, where are you going to hunt? And then like, I'm going to hunt over here, or if, you know, if I'm successful, if I kill a deer, like I might tell my dad, be like, oh yeah, like I seen a nice buck right in this area. Like, why don't you hunt right there? And I might go hunt somewhere else. So most of the time, I would say probably 75% of the time I have somebody with me, if not more than that.
Okay.
Just because like, you know, I love bow hunting. I love hunting by myself, but I also, if somebody can go with me, like that's kind of a part or enjoyment, just having a buddy to be able to go out there with you, you know?
Yeah. You like sharing that whole experience. So that's kind of cool. It's probably safer too, you know, especially with, you know, well, it just anything, but I mean, especially when you throw like rivers and boats and, you know, water and that kind of thing into the mix, you know?
Absolutely. For sure.
So I think you kind of touched on a little bit earlier on your first trad kill, but I don't think we went into it. So do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So we had talked about the bow that I was actually going to hunt with this year. So the bow that I killed my buck with is the Black Hunter Longbow. I know you're familiar with that bow. Like mm-hmm. you've done a review on that. So talking a little more about my transition into that hunt and to basically lay out how we got there. That recurve that I hunted with, or I'm going to be hunting with, I started practicing. So whenever I made that decision, it was like January. I was like, all right, I'm selling my compound. I'm dedicating the whole season. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm hunting this fall with it. So that gave me basically 9 months till hunting season, because hunting season here in Missouri opens September 15th. So I was like, I'll have 9 months. I feel like I should be able to practice and get everything down. So I started, you know, practicing. I was shooting the recurve and I liked it a lot. And I'd always been curious about longbows. They just kind of intrigued me. I liked the look of them. I liked the feel of them. But I'd never actually owned one. I'd shot some in bow shops and I really liked them. So for my birthday present, I asked for a longbow. I didn't want to spend, you know, $1,500 or $1,000 on my first bow. So I was like, mm-hmm. man, let me look on here. And, you know, I'd heard some good stuff about that bow. I was like, man, it's only like $115. Let me go ahead and buy that, or, you know, ask for that for my birthday. So
right,
I ended up getting that for my birthday in October. So I actually had that bow, and I actually switched over and hunted with it that fall, which would have been 2021. And okay. I had one deer that I had come. I was scouting my way into a place, and I had one deer come in at like 20 yards. And that's, you know, I'll practice out to like 30, but like, you know, 20 to me was at least my first year was kind of far. And I was like, man, like, I just don't know. And the angle wasn't right. And ended up the deer, like I took a step to my right to try to get a better shot angle. And when I took that step, the deer ended up running off. And I was like, okay, well, it's not a big deal. It was just like a small, you know, young deer. So, once all that happened, you know, I continued to practice and all that. And I seen a really nice buck that fall, like in November. I had a really wide 8-point. He's probably like 20 inches wide, just a big, mature, you know, good looking buck. But he ended up coming in and he was at like 30 yards from me. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, and I'm marking these spots on my Onyx and trying to, you know, remember all this stuff for the next season. And fast forward to November the next year. So at this point, you know, I got my bow in October. I seen that big 8-point in November. And then fast forward, you know, 1 year from then, I'd been shooting and practicing because I really liked the longbow. I got a new string on it, really tuned it up, and, you know, felt pretty deadly. And I knew if I could get a deer to within 10, 15 yards, that was my sweet spot. So I went out where I'd seen that 8-point the year before, and we decided to make a trip. So my dad and I went camping. So I left work early. I took the day off on Friday, and so I left and got up there, and I had the evening to hunt by myself. So, you know, I took the boat out and hunted. I didn't see anything Friday, and then Saturday went out, hunted that morning and didn't do any good, hunted Saturday evening, and then fast forward to the next day, Sunday morning, I'd went into this area, and this hunt is on YouTube, and I think you'd said you'd watched it, but I basically had where I parked the boat, there was a piece of private land that was probably 200 yards from the boat, maybe a little bit longer, maybe 250 yards, but there was this high spot that was pretty flat. But there was these three drains that came together, and it was only like 100 yards from where I'd hunted the previous year where I'd seen that big buck, and I knew what way the deer were traveling. And there were some white oaks that were up there, and I was like, well, I'll just get up on that top area and hunt up there and see if those deer will basically come through that funnel, kind of where that pinch point was. So I got up there, and you know, we went in and got a late start that Sunday morning because you know, the water was really low, and we hadn't ran that channel in a while. So we went up in there, and I got set up at probably like just a little bit after 7 a.m. And I wasn't in the stand for maybe 15 minutes. Like, I think I say how long I was in the stand for on that video, but I had a doe that started coming through, and she worked between me and the boat, and she was probably 40 yards from me. So I'm watching her, and, you know, with filming my hunts, I had turned my GoPro on, so it's rolling. And she kind of goes out of sight, goes down behind the hill. And I'm sitting there, like, trying to make sure all my gear and stuff's ready. Because, like I said, I just got set up in the stand. I wasn't even in the stand, like, 15 minutes. So I'm just going through, you know, kind of do a couple practice draws. And I look up, and this this big-bodied deer is coming my way. And I look up, and I see antlers. And I'm like, oh, man, like, that's a good-looking deer. Like, that's a big-bodied deer. And at this point, like, I've never killed anything with a traditional bow. So I'm like, this is a shooter for sure.
Yeah.
And so he's walking, and he walks behind this big cedar tree. And at this point, it hits me, and I kind of panic. I'm like, oh, my goodness, like, this is about to happen. And so I kind of have, like, a little bit of a freak-out moment. I'm just like, oh, my goodness, like, I'm about to kill my first deer with the trad bow. And so, like, I'm looking at him, and, like, I reach down, and I, you know, I already had the GoPro going, so I had the little Tacticam on a camera mount. So I hit the button to record on that, so I kind of get it set up. And you'll see me, I'll actually grab the string with my tab, and I'm, you know, kind of put a little pressure on my string. And, you know, years ago, I would have tried to, like, rush that shot and shoot really quick, because there was a gap between that cedar tree and this big tree. And I'm watching, and the deer is walking through there. I'm like, all right, Ryan, take a breath, relax. So I'm like, okay, at this point, like, I know it's a done, like, I'm going to get a shot, and I know this deer is going to be at like 10 yards. So it walks behind that tree. I come back, make sure I hit full draw, and I just pick my spot. And before I drew back, I'm like, oh my goodness, like, am I going to miss? And I'm like, no, like, I'm not going to miss. Like, I practice this all the time. I was like, I've got this. So, like, I put that thought out of my mind, because, you know, a lot of times you can kind of psych yourself out and be like, oh my goodness, and work yourself up. But I'm like, dude, like, this is 10 yards. I've got this. So I was like, I'm not going to miss. Like, I'm going to drill this deer. Like, that's a dead deer walking. Like, he's 10 yards. Like, he's done. So, like, I've got this confidence. So I kind of built that confidence up. I'm like, so I just, you know, drew back, made sure I, you know, hit my anchor point and let all my practice, you know, take place. And I let that string go. And when I did, I just heard that whop. And it, you know, I obviously connected. The deer was walking when I shot, and I didn't stop the deer because, you know, he's already on pins and needles. He's following a hot doe. And, you know, with him being at that close range, I didn't want to go meh and stop him and have him, like, stop and look at me and, like, run off or something. And yeah. So with him walking at that distance, you know, I was very confident that I could put it there, and I let it go. And with his left shoulder, he opened that up, and when he did, it hit him, you know, right behind the shoulder, and it was a double lung shot. It ended up lodging his offside shoulder.
Nice.
And, you know, he you know, did the kind of humped up kick, and he turned to run off, and I watched him, and kind of watched him run out of sight. I could hear him running, and, you know, it wasn't maybe 15 seconds later, I hear a crash, and I heard him go down. It's like, oh my goodness, like, I just killed a big buck.
Like, it just happened.
Yeah. And I was just like, oh my goodness. So, like, my dad and my mom and my wife were all on a text chain with me, and I was like, I just smoked a giant. And my dad's like, what? Call me. You know, and because, like, my dad and I, like I said, like, I hadn't been in the stand, like, it was like, we got in there late, so it was like 7 o'clock. And I shot this deer at like 7:20 something. So it had been less than like 20 minutes. He's like,
wow,
how do you shoot that deer so fast? Like, are you even in the tree yet? And I was like, oh no. He said, call me. So I called my dad. I'm on the phone with him. And he's like, what happened? I was like, man, like I just shot a giant. He's like, how big is he? I was like, he's big. I was like, well, he's not like a giant giant. I was like, he's big, but he's not like that big. He's like, well, how big is that? I was like, I don't know. I said, he's got at least 12 or 13 points. He's like, what? And I was like, yeah. I said, I don't know. I said, all I know is on his left side, he had points everywhere. I said, he had at least 7 or 8 on his left side. And he's like, are you serious? I was like, yeah. I said, I don't know. I was like, I just don't know how big he is.
So you smoked this giant, like, deer for your very first trad kill.
Yeah. Yeah. My first trad
kill. God.
And, you know, I was really glad.
I shot a carp, by the way.
Yeah.
Mine was a grass carp.
Yeah. That's funny. So, anyway, so my dad's like, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, I said, let's just, you know, go ahead and hunt. Because, like, my dad, like, when he called me, or when I called him, I'm like, are you set up? He's like, no, I'm not set up. He's like, I'm literally, like, at the base of my tree. He's like, I've got one stick or one step on the tree right now. Because, you know, we both saddle hunt.
Yeah.
And so I'm in the saddle. And he said, what do you want to do? I said, well, I mean, it's up to you. I said, you know, we can wait or whatever. And I was like, let's just go ahead and wait and give this deer, you know, an hour or a couple hours. I said, I'm like 99% sure, like, he's dead. But, you know, I want to give him plenty of time. I don't want to bump him or mess up my first trad kill, you know. Because, you know, most of the time with a compound, I'm getting a pass through. But, you know, with me hitting him on the offside shoulder, I didn't know how the blood trail was going to be or anything like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we sit there and I'm on the phone with him. Like, oh, wait a second. I was like, here comes another buck. I was like, I got to go. So, like, I hang up with him and there's like a 7 or 8 point. I think it's like a 7 point. And he comes through following that doe. And, at that point, I call him back. I was like, you need to get over here right now. He's like, what's up? And I was like, there's a hot, like another buck that just came through. I said, that doe is hot. I was like, there's no telling how many bucks are going to come through here. And so he said, all right. So he, by the time he got back to the boat and then, you know, came down and got out and, you know, came into where I was at, it was probably been like 45 minutes maybe. And he said, what do you want to do? He said, do you want to get down or, like, do you want to track the deer or what? So I was like, well, let me get down. So I got down and I said, I kind of want to go get that deer. He's like, all right, let's go get him. So, you know, I packed up all my stuff and left it there at the base of the tree. And we started looping around and we found our first blood was at probably 20 yards from where I shot the deer. We found a couple drops and I knew there wasn't much blood right there, but I knew the direction that he had went and I thought I'd heard him crash. So I walked over there and believe it or not, that deer went probably close to 200 yards.
No kidding. And,
yeah. It was downhill. He just ran down this drainage. Down.
Oh.
So, and you know, he was probably amped up cause he was following that hot doe, but you know, we ended up finding him and he was a really cool looking deer. He actually had 7 on his left and 5 on his right. So he's like, he's a unique deer cause he's only like 11 inches wide, but he's super, super tall. On the back, like he has like regular brow tines, but on his left side on his G2, he had a split G2, but he actually broke that point off. And then his next point, his G3 was kind of bladed, but it was like a real big split on that one. And then, like, he went out and where his main beam was, like, he kind of did this turkey foot looking thing off the front of his antlers on that side. And then, you know, his other side was a mainframe 10-point side, but he just had, you know, real long tines and just super gnarly. You know, and, you know, once we walked up and found him, like, you can hear the excitement in my video. I'm just like, oh, my goodness, like, look at this deer. Because, like, I honestly had no idea how big he was. Because when I got up to him, like, I was thinking he was more of, like, a mainframe 8 with trash. Yeah. I didn't even realize that he was a mainframe 10-point. So, like, whenever I get over to him, like, all I see is this, like, 12 or 13-inch G2 on his 10-point side. I'm just like, oh, my goodness. Because, like, I had no idea. And once I grabbed it and pulled it up, and just really seeing all the trash on his left side, I was just like, wow.
And so like, he's got all this like character and everything, and
yeah, and
wow,
his body, you know, he was a really big, you know, pretty big body deer, you know, the biggest buck I'd ever killed body wise. He had a you know, a big, his neck at the smallest point where you know, their basically neck meets the back of their head or whatever, was like 24 inches. So he was a, you know, pretty big neck on that deer.
Pulling up, yeah.
Yeah.
Was your dad there for the recovery?
Yeah, yeah. He was with me.
That's cool.
So, like, I'm, like, way, like, I don't know how far. It just seemed like I was way ahead because I was almost, like, running to try to find the deer, you know. So, you know, he's looking over here for blood, and I'm more, like, looking for a body. And so, like, once I found him, like, hey! You know, like, he's over here. I found him. He's like, what? I'm like, yeah, come on. Look at him. He's right here. And so he came over and, you know, he was just really pumped and told me, you know, congratulations. And, you know, right there on the spot, it was pretty cool because, you know, I tried to call Harmon right then just to, like, share. Because I'd already texted him and let him know, like, hey, man, like, I just, you know, shot this deer. And, you know, so at that point, we took some really good pictures and got some good video at that point. You know, I handed my phone over to my dad and let him take some good videos. We kind of did a recovery and then, you know, drug the deer out back to the boat.
Yeah. So. God, that must have meant a lot though. That's pretty cool. You know, I mean, to share all that with, you know, you're pretty much, like you said, like your hunting partner and
To have my dad there with me was awesome. Like that's a memory I'll always remember. And, you know, it's cool because, you know, at 10 years old, when I killed my first buck, he was there with me. And then, you know, whenever I killed my first buck with a bow, would have been in 2007. You know, he was there, like he helped me recover the deer. And then we actually went out to Colorado and it was nice because I got to be with him on his first elk hunt. And, you know, I called in a really nice 5x5 bull and he was there, you know, with me. I was obviously there with him on his first bull elk kill. And, you know, and then, you know, transitioning over to the traditional side where, you know, I kill my biggest buck with a bow. You know, I've killed a bigger deer score wise, whitetail with a firearm. But, you know, that's my biggest scoring buck as far as a bow would go with a whitetail. Yeah. You know, I've killed a pretty good one out west, you know, a mule deer, but that kind of different caliber, different animal, you know.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Wow. That's God, that's a hell of a story. Yeah. A very cool one. So much to talk about, but I don't want to keep on here forever, but okay. I want to get into like when you actually set up, you said something about saddle hunting, right? So we talked about how you're accessing everything mostly by boat. If you have to walk in, you walk in, that kind of thing. When did you pick up on the saddle? What kind of led you to that? And I don't know, we can kind of get into what you think of it.
Yeah. I love saddle hunting. It took me a while to, you know, to make the switch or transition. So the first time we ever actually got exposed to saddle hunting would have been 2000 and I think it was 2009. My dad and I, it might have been even 2008. I think it was 2008. Yeah, because I was in high school still. No, I guess it would have been 2009. I can't remember. I think it's 2008, but anyway, my dad.
Well before the boom.
Yeah. So,
you know,
we went on a hunting trip out to Ohio, I believe it was. And when we were there, we had, I can't remember if we were at a gas station or where we were at. But whatever the circumstance was, is, we had met these guys and we're like, what is that? Cause like they come out and got this contraption and we're like, what in the world? And they're like, you don't know what this is? We're like, no, like, what is that? We've never seen anything like that. This is you call this saddle hunting. And we're like, what is that? Like, cause all at this point, all we've heard of is, you know, hunting with a climb or hunting with a hang on. And they kind of showed it to us. And my dad was intrigued. He's more of a gear junkie, and he really does his research, and he knows a lot about it. So, he got back home and he started researching, and before you knew it, he had ordered one online, and he ended up, I think it was a trophy line is what I want to say.
Was it like one of those Guido's Web that everyone talks about, or that seems to be like one of the original, but
yeah, I don't know. I think it was like a trophy line, but this thing's like old, and he gets it, and I'm like, man, like you can have that. I ain't hunting out of that thing. And so he actually started hunting with it in like 2009 or whatever. And, I still hunted with my climber. And then, whenever the tethered guys came out with the new, the saddles, whenever the boom happened, I guess that would have, 2017 or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
2018, I really started looking at that, and I like the idea of switching to it just because of weight wise. Because with the style that we have, we're like run and gun. I very rarely like ever sit in the same tree twice. Because what I'll do is I'll go in and hunt fresh sign, and I'm looking for sign, and I want to set up right then. And since I film my hunts, I'm carrying multiple cameras and a camera arm, and you've got everything that you're carrying, and it just gets bulky, and you're carrying a lot of stuff in.
Yep.
So I like the idea of weight wise, I could cut a lot of weight. And so that's whenever I ended up getting the Mantis. So I could still hunt with the tethered Mantis. That's what I hunt with.
Oh, still?
Yeah. Yeah. I still hunt with that. And my dad, I think the year before last, he had bought like 3 or 4 different saddles and tried a bunch of them out. And we had actually went to a tethered event. I think it was in 2020. And he actually won the Phantom saddle. So I actually tried the Phantom. I hunted out of it twice. But it's more of like a football style shaped seat.
Mm-hmm.
So the Mantis has like a little more, a bigger mesh. So it's like a bigger seat. And to me, like that's kind of what I learned to hunt out of. And so I was already used to it and comfortable with it. And so I just didn't like how small the Phantom was. It just wasn't as comfortable. And it seemed to give me more hip pinch. So if people don't know, what saddle hunting is, I'm assuming like everybody knows now. You have your tether that goes around the tree, you hook your bridge in, and this bridge goes down and basically is like a saddle that goes around. You're sitting in it. So it's kind of like you're in a hammock in a tree, like linemen or guys who work on telephone poles use these, but like I said, with that Phantom, it was just too much hip pinch for me. So I just decided, to hunt with that Mantis, and that's what I've still been hunting with. But I'm kind of hunting a hybrid, though. So I actually don't use the bridge that came with it. There's a saddle company called H2. I'm sure you probably heard of H2 Saddles.
Yeah.
They have something called the Triad Bridge. So it's basically a three-piece bridge system, and I like that because it hooks into the loops on my saddle, so I can adjust it. So it's kind of like the Phantom where there's comfort settings, but with this, I can just loosen or adjust it to exactly where I want, and once I tighten that down, it's there. It's not going anywhere. So when
that Mantis first came out, I kind of jumped on board the whole saddle thing, I did the, bandwagon, I liked it at first, right? Now, the Mantis, for me, I think a lot of people had this problem. Again, everyone's different, right? Because you're saying you absolutely still love it, right? Because all these other tethers, all these other saddles, came out, some existed before, but a lot of them, kind of came out more, refining on like the big boom that the tethered guys pretty much reinvigorated, because this was around before. It's not like they started it, but the Mantis I found for me, I didn't get hip pinch from it. Hip pinch has never been a problem for me in a saddle, but I did have issue with it kind of riding up, you kind of get a wedgie from it.
Right.
And I didn't like that. I could never get comfortable in that thing. And the only reason I switched to a saddle is because I really wasn't too comfortable in a tree stand at the time. I've gotten way better. I've learned how to lock and secure that stand a whole lot better. And I always didn't like the wobble. So I sold my XOP, XOP Vanish at the time, which I hated. Okay. I still don't like it. And I was going to get an Assault too, like a Lone Wolf Assault too. But then this whole, tethered thing came along. I'm like, I'm going to give it a try. So at first I really liked it. And then I'm like, well, it doesn't fit. It's not as comfortable. I feel like I'm sliding through it, wedgy, that kind of thing. Especially since I started doing like one stick climbing and things like that, where you're relying on kind of like hanging there for a while you, reach down and maneuver and move your stick up and stuff. Right. So the more comfortable you are, instead of feeling like you're getting a wedgy kind of thing, the better. Then I switched to, the Tacta saddle, right.
Yeah,
and I still have the original Tacta saddle, and that's what I'm using. I kind of fell out of love with actually saddle hunting, and I've kind of gone back to a tree stand, but I'm actually, like you said, I'm kind of doing a hybrid like you are. I'm using my saddle as my harness. I can still saddle hunt if I want to, but I'm using it to one stick climb with. I'm using it as my harness, and that's kind of where I've settled. I can still saddle hunt if I need to, I can, I can stand on my beast stick or whatever and do that if I feel like it. But, I got to the point where there was too many trees where, if it's leaning, a little too much, I couldn't be on the side of the tree that I wanted to be on, because you're a pendulum, right? I mean, you're a plumb bob. Gravity's going to win. And I always feel like I was fighting. And especially with a stick bow too, it's one thing when you're standing there kind of waiting, and you can kind of wait one leg, kind of push off with one leg, versus another, you can kind of drape your arm over and kind of shift your weight around the tether one side, so you're not swinging so far. But then the minute you have to go and reach, and now your upper body is having to do other things besides stabilize yourself and contort around and pull the bow back and align and all that stuff, I would just end up swinging to the low side, and I'm like, whoa, where are we going here? All that balance I used to have. And I wasn't using ring of steps or anything like that. I was just either on a little mini platform or one of the stick mounted platforms,
Right.
I'm sure if I had something that was more encircled the tree a little bit, it's a little easier to kind of do the push pull thing with your legs, but to kind of stabilize your lower self. But I just found that to be a little too difficult with a traditional bow. I mean, with a compound, I don't think it would be that I would have those issues, because you just kind of yank back and you can be, as long as you're full draw, front sight, rear sight, done, right?
But, exactly.
The pulling and the muscles and alignment that you have to have, and string clearance and limb clearance and all that stuff, it just wasn't working. So I kind of went back to, the tree stand,
I gotcha. Yeah. It's definitely definitely a big learning curve. The first time I ever hunted out of one, it wasn't very enjoyable or very comfortable, but once you get, four or five sits under your belt, it's just basically hanging there and making your adjustments. And once you get everything figured out where you like it and kind of get the balance and, trust everything. Cause I remember the first time getting on that platform or feeling that, just the way that saddle moves and the way you can pivot and twist, is just a very different or kind of weird feeling at first.
That's actually one of the things that I did like, because again, coming from, kind of a wobblier tree stand. I didn't like the little, I call little micro wobbles under your feet kind of thing. I never liked that part of it. But hanging in a tree, under tension, I have no problem. I can be upside down, sideways, whatever. I have zero fear of being, up there, because you're constantly under, you're under tension in one direction.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like anything's gonna, there's no wobble going
right
on, there's a swing going on, there's no wobble going on. So for that peace of mind, it made me happier to be in one of those. But the fact that I couldn't really do what I wanted to do in a tree or be where I wanted to be in a tree, it just I've kind of gone back.
Right.
So, does your dad still use one too?
Yes, he does. I'm trying to think. I know he's got, you know, he's got multiple saddles.
Well, that's right. You said he switched to the Phantom too, and yeah.
Well, he had won the Phantom, but I think he's got, I don't remember if he's got a Cruiser. I know he had like multiple saddles, but about a month ago, I think he just ordered another one. He's got, it's not the Eberhardt, the Signature Series, but it's like a dual panel. I can't remember which company it is with, but it's like a two panel system that yeah. he's running now. He just got it. So I don't know how he's going to like that.
How are you climbing?
Right now I'm just carrying in, sticks. Normally I carry in four sticks with me. Last year I hunted with, lone wolves, and then I was also hunting with, the Hawk Heliums, I believe mm-hmm. it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, right now I think I've got the lone wolves. Generally I carry in four sticks with me, but most of the time, especially since I've switched over to traditional, I normally only hunt, you know, three sticks high. I'm probably, you know, 12 to 15 feet. And the reason for that is I don't want to get so high that my angle is super steep. Cause whenever sure. you get so high, you're going to, you know, cut that kill zone, basically make it smaller just because of the angle. So, you know, with the trad bow, I want to have as much of a target as I can have.
Yeah, you're taking a pie plate and kind of turning it into an oval, you know, like a smaller and smaller oval, you know, the okay. higher you get kind of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. What was I going to ask you here? So, when you're carrying in all this, like, how are you strapping everything? Are you just kind of walking with this in your hand? You got, because you said you're not really walking in that far, especially if you go in with a boat, right? So, I mean, are you minimalist everywhere else? Do you have a big backpack? How are you getting deer out? What's the setup there?
Yeah, it just depends. Like, sometimes I do walk in, you know, 3/4 or even a mile deep. It just, like I said, depends on the circumstance. If I can walk 150, 200, 300 yards, I will. But, you know, I would say probably half the time, you know, I'm walking probably half a mile in. It was just, but the system that I'm using right now, I have a Cabela's fanny pack. They're like $120. It's very similar to the Monster pack. I'm trying to remember who makes that, but basically this pack, it has shoulder straps. It has a buckle that I can buckle in the front up where my chest is, and then it has a back support that comes around that hooks on to where your hips go. So you yeah. have your shoulder support plus like around your hips. So multiple spots, and this packet has molly loops on the side, and on the top it has two or three straps that hook in and have buckles. So the way I run it normally on the inside of my pack, I'll put like some space rain or a jacket or whatever. I generally have my camera arm in there, some water, you know, any of my calls or stuff like that. Like if I have a grunt call or rattling antlers, I'll put those in there. I'll zip all that closed, and then on top, I'll sit my sticks right on top of my fanny pack, and then I'll strap those on. Once those are strapped, the backpack part or the strap part, right in the center of your back, there's a spot that's not quite the size of a basketball, but it's kind of that shape, and it's just like a big support, and I actually attach, there's a couple of loops through there. And so that's actually where I attach my platform, and I'm running the Predator platform. So I'll have that Predator platform right there. So it's like on the center of my back.
Yeah.
And then what I'll do is, you know, once I walk in, like I have my bow in my hand. So my process is I'll walk in, you know, once I find where I want to set up, once I get that tree, you know, I'll usually, you know, do like three sticks. I'll, you know, put my first stick on, I'll step up, and I'll have my lineman's rope around the tree, put my second one on, go up, get my third one, go up. I'll usually place my platform, and then I'll step up, put my tether hook in. Once I'm hooked in, then I have these like molly loops. It's a basically the strap that we had somebody sew Molly loops into. I'll wrap that around the tree up high above my tether, and then I have a gear tie. And so I'll actually pull my longbow up and hook that one in and hang it, get it ready, and then I'll reach in my bag and grab my arm. I'll hook that up to my tree, and then I'll put my, you know, put my Tacticam on that camera arm, you know, get my GoPro out, get it on my head, and then, you know, I'm ready to rock and roll at that point.
So you're carrying quite a bit of camera gear then every time.
Yeah, so most of the time I film and, you know, basically create these YouTube videos with three different cameras. I'll have a GoPro on my head, I'll have the Tacticam, and then I'll use my cell phone. So the way, you know, cameras are now, you know, most of the time I'll put my GoPro only shoots in 1080p, so that's what that's rolling. My Tacticam is shooting in 4K, and then I changed my cell phone settings to 1080p just because my computer isn't really fast enough to process all that in 4K.
Yeah.
So what I'll do is I'll just try to put everything in 4K, and then usually even the Tacticam, it'll have to be like condensed down and made to 4K. That way it's all formatted the same.
So were you filming like why did you get into filming? Let's put it that way. Were you doing it kind of before the YouTube channel, or did you say, hey, you know, I'm going to start this channel and then kind of get into filming?
I just really enjoy the aspect of filming, the challenge of it. And then not only that, but for a couple of reasons, being able to share the hunt with people, and then also being able to rewind it back and see exactly where you hit an animal.
Yeah.
And then whenever they run off, you know, a lot of people don't pay attention. They just shoot the deer and then they black out. So whenever I'm actually shooting a deer, like I'll shoot it and then focus on getting that on film, try to get them running off. And then I always mark the last spot that I seen them. So that way, you know, it's just helping me to be able to recover that deer, remember or see and look back exactly where that deer was at. Because I've actually went to blood trail an animal before, and I could have promised you, like, right here is where that deer was when you shot it. And then I'm like looking and looking and looking for like 5 minutes. I can't find any blood. And I'm like, well, like, let me pull my phone up. And I pull my phone up and zoom in. I'm like, oh, like, I'm like 20, 25 yards too short.
Yeah.
And like, you go out and like, oh, right here. Oh, there's blood right here. So like, it's actually like helped and saved me. So I actually filmed my first hunt. There's a hunt of it, or a video of it on YouTube. I think it was back in 2012 was the first hunt that I actually published. And I have I have a actual hunting playlist. I think there's like 18 video or 19, I don't know, 18 or 19 videos on there. You know, there is a lot of does. Unfortunately, like, I don't have a lot of buck footage, like, because generally, you know, I'm not getting paid to do this. I just do this all for fun. If I see a big buck come in, it's just like, do I want to get this on film or do I want to kill this buck, you know?
Right, yeah.
So now that I'm hunting with the traditional bow, I think it's going to help me to be able to get a lot more hunts and a lot more film actually on footage. Like, even if it's just with the GoPro and it's a wide angle.
Yeah.
Just because the animal, you have to be so intimate and so close to that deer or hog or whatever it might be that, you know, it's right there. So instead of having to, you know, pull the camera out and zoom in and try to, you know, get it all, you know, you just hit record and hopefully, you know, have it on film.
Well, the good thing is it's going to be a lot closer too.
You know? Yeah, hopefully so. Yeah.
Yeah, the filming thing is tough, man. I mean, I see guys do it. And I just, you know, like, I just recorded like my hog kill on GoPro, and that was easy enough, right? It just goes on your head. It's got that little button. You can just push one time, you know, the one time kind of quick recording thing. But I carry enough stuff in the woods, you know. I pack too much anyway. That I know for a fact now that there's no way that I would get into, you know, carrying like an actual real camera with a camera arm and this and that. That's just not, you know, nothing that I want to get into. But the GoPro thing is kind of cool. You know, it's good enough footage, I think, for up close, at least for, you know, anything I want to look at. So But yeah, I mean, kudos to guys that just, I mean, have all this, like you said, you got like three things going, right? You got like the main camera and then like GoPro and a Tacticam and your phone. And, you know, that's a lot to keep track of, man. It's a lot of editing too, you know,
when you're
putting all that stuff together. I mean, there's a lot of hours that goes into, you know, making sense of all those just random clips, random files here and there.
Right. Yeah. And that's one thing. It definitely can be challenging. It can be super aggravating because it's like, man, I don't want to carry this camera out there. I don't want to do this. And I'm like, no, like you're doing it. Cause as soon as you don't do it, you're going to have, you know, a giant buck come in at 10 yards and you're going to get it done. So, you know, there's a pro and a con to it. And you're exactly right. There's a lot of editing and it's a lot of time that goes into it. So that hunt, if you look up on my YouTube channel, that 12 point, it's like Longbow Public Land. And that hunt is only like close to 8 minutes long.
Yeah.
So I actually had over an hour worth of footage between, so between the three cameras and different angles and, you know, going out and setting up and, you know, blood trailing and recovery and the exit. So yeah, I mean, it took me probably 6.5 or 7 hours worth of editing. So, cause I just had an hour worth of footage. I had to condense it all down. And the thing is like you're trying to tell a story. You're trying to take somebody along with you and actually like make them feel like they're in the tree with you or they know what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, and making all of that make sense and flow and not be too long or not be too short and to be able to keep their attention. Cause you know, most of your guys, if they're just watching a hunt on YouTube, they don't want to spend, you know, 38 minutes watching a video, especially if they're on their lunch or on their break, you know.
Yeah.
You know, if they see a hunt that's, you know, 8 minutes long or 7 minutes long, it's like, oh yeah, like I might watch that. You know, a lot of people don't have that time. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm one of those guys that will watch that, but also I'm one of those guys that there's no way that I would film that much. So I'm really, appreciative of the people that do, because I consume a lot of content and I'm really appreciative of the guys that actually do put out that much content, you know, at least someone's doing it. So I'm kind of happy for that. So when you recover, how are you getting them out? Are you dragging back to the boat, you said, or are you, you know, do you bone out? What do you do?
Yeah, so normally what we'll do is once we, you know, recover the animal, you know, I'm trying to basically get it out of there and get it on ice or, you know, especially if it's a nice buck, you're trying to, you know, have mounted or whatever. You don't want to lose that cape. So basically what we'll do is we gut the deer. Once he's gutted, you know, we basically just drag it out to the boat and, you know, get him in the boat. And a lot of times if we have we'll have ice chest with us or whatever. We might have some frozen gallons of, you know, just water in the cooler. So we'll just throw that on the inside just to try to keep them cool, especially if it's like warm out or whatever. Cause on that day I killed that buck, I think it was probably in the 40s in the morning when I killed him, but you know, I think it got up to like 65 or 70 degrees in the middle of part of the day. So it was pretty warm. So
you're still fighting time.
Yeah, trying to get them out, just making sure that bacteria doesn't set in and you don't want any hair slippage or anything like that. So.
Right, right. Awesome. What else did I want to talk about here? So you're kind of like an all-season hunter, though, right? I mean, you hunt, you know, you got, like you said, you kind of do a little bit out of state every now and then. I think I saw like a turkey hunt on there. Any plans this year to, you know, other than whitetail, let's say, right? Any kind of big hunts coming up? Any big plans?
I was originally, Harmon Carson and I were supposed to go to Oklahoma. We had put in for the McAllister hunt and, like we've been putting in for the last couple of years and this year, like, I just didn't have any vacation time. And so I was like, man, just go ahead and put in, and ended up, he drew that hunt. So he'll be going there, and unfortunately, I won't be able to because I just didn't have the vacation time to be able to do it this year. But I think I've got a trip planned. Me and my dad are going to go hunt. We'll end up going camping out probably in the same area where I killed that 12 point at. We'll probably go in November at some point, up, you know, camping out or whatever.
Cool. Any other plans to go out west again for elk or anything, or?
Not this year. I do have quite a bit of preference points. So usually we do like over the counter out there, but I think I have 8 points for Colorado for elk. I think I have maybe 2 or 3 mule deer points there. I think I've got a couple points in Idaho maybe. And then I do have a point in South Dakota as well for antelope, but I don't see anything like not anything this fall, but hopefully in the future, you know, I do have some mule deer points, some elk points. So that would be a lot of fun. I've never actually got to elk hunt. Like I said, I went with my dad and I called in that bull for him, but I've personally never had a tag where I actually got to elk hunt. I've been mule deer hunting 3 times and that's pretty awesome.
What about bear? Any interest in bear?
I would like to. I just don't know where I would go or kind of where to start at. I know there's a lot of bear hunting up there in Canada. Obviously, yeah. Here in the States, there's a lot. But, you know, I would definitely like to do that, especially now that I'm traditional hunting. I didn't really have a big desire to do that with a compound or a rifle. But, you know, I definitely think, you know, that would be pretty awesome, especially with having, you know, those bait stations where they'll come in and, you know, you basically have a, you know, 10, 15, 18 yard shot or whatever it might be, where, however they set it up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of obsessed with it for some reason now. Cause so many guys have gone, this year, and had, you know, success. So yeah. It was something that was on my kind of, you know, like, hey, it'd be kind of cool to do, but now for some reason I'm like, I'm consuming a lot of bear content.
Yeah,
it's just really sparked that, you know, and it's one of those things I know I'm just going to have to, like, you know, save up for and pay to do it. You know, like you said, Canada, I mean, I'm in Minnesota, so, you know, probably not too far. I don't know, maybe like eight hours north of you, maybe 6 hours north of you probably at this point. But it's, for me here, you know, anywhere from like 9 to 12 hour drive, like north, either Saskatchewan, Ontario, whatever, there's, you know, seems to be like reputable bear outfitters, yeah. You know, that cater to trad guys. And it's like, yeah, you know, that's kind of doable. It's one of those things where you just gotta, I don't know, save up, suck it up and just say, I'm going to go on an adventure and just do it, you know?
Yeah. It would definitely be awesome. A really good experience. Talking about that, like I've actually been watching some, I don't know if you've seen any of it. You probably know or have heard of Clay Newcomb. He's mm-hmm. Bear Grease. He's got the Bear Grease podcast.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool. Did you get to see the videos he put out? He killed, I think he killed like 2 bears within like 24 hours in Arkansas with like a recurve, I think it was.
No, I've seen an older video of his where he's, is he shooting like, is like a bear like near a culvert or something like that? He's kind of.
Yeah, that might've been it. I think he's like in it. The bear's in a slough or something like that, and he's got a recurve and shoots him real close. Like, it's super cool. Yeah. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Like I said, I'm not like a deer mount kind of guy. I'm not like into taxidermy or horns or anything like that. But for some reason, I really want a bear rug. I don't know what I'd do with it. I don't know where I'd put it.
Yeah,
you know. But it's one of those things, and I don't know. I guess I'll think about it when the time comes, you know, to actually go on a trip. But it's something that's on my radar that I want to definitely save up for, you know, if not next year, maybe the year after that or something like that. But and all these little mini trips were fun too. Like, I mean, I just, you know, on a whim, you know, last minute, you know, went down to Georgia, you know, to hawk hunt and stuff. And, you know, that didn't cost a lot, you know. I mean, it was just bomb down there and, you know, cheap motel, you split 3 ways or 2 ways or whatever. And just gas and food basically, and nothing but time, you know what I mean? Cost a little bit of time, but I mean, I had a blast.
Yeah. When what wasn't that like 2 or 3 weeks ago, or when was
it was about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, that was a ton of fun. So all right, man, we've been on for like an hour and a half here, and anything we haven't covered here before I kind of wrap this up? I mean, or that you want to talk about, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only things I hadn't really said was like my aero setup or and stuff like that. I mean, I talked a little bit about the 5-inch, but
yep.
Right now I'm shooting the Easton Axis Traditionals. So they're coming in, I think they're like 10.2 grains per inch or something like that. I'd have to look to see, but I'm shooting like a 400 spine, and I think it's like a 30.5-inch arrow. I do have the 75-grain inserts in there, and then up front I have a 175-grain Simmons Swamp Shark.
Oh, yeah.
And so overall, you know, on the back half of my arrow, I have a 7-inch reflective, you know, tape. So basically, whenever you hit it with a flashlight, if you're looking for it, you know, it lights up. And then, you know, it's just a reflective wrap, you know.
Yeah.
And then
what are those Swamp Sharks actually weighing in for you? Have you actually weighed them?
They're supposed to be 175.
I would weigh them.
Okay.
Just for, but then if you don't want to get it in your head, you know,
yeah.
then don't weigh them. But, yeah. You know, mine come in like 190, 192, you know, somewhere around there. Yeah. Yeah. They're over. I talked to, God, I can't remember the guy's name that owns it now. Nice guy. And we were having a conversation, and he's like, look, I make all these, you know, by hand. They're all handmade, and they all come in, like, you know, quite a bit heavier, you know. And he's like, you know, by the time you sharpen them and this, that, and the other, you know, they might get close. But he goes, I try to be within 15 grains, you know, but he's like, don't count on it. And he's like, and you know what? He goes, 99% of, like, trad guys at the distances that we shoot will never, ever feel the difference in 15 grains. I'm like, dude, I 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can go up and down like 25, sometimes even 50 grains for that short. You know, if you're going to, the difference in, like, you're being tuned, right? Perfectly tuned. I'm using air quotes with, you know, one setup versus, like, in a hunting situation, or if you're contorted and you, like, your short stroke or you pluck or whatever by like an inch or two, you're talking the difference in tune there that like 50 grains might cover, you know what I mean? Like one way or another. So, yeah, I 100% agree with him, but yeah, my Swamp Sharks come in like 190.
Well, yeah. I would have to check that. I know overall, like, my arrow setup, it's kind of on the heavier end. They're not super heavy, but I guess it just depends on who you are, or what you think heavy is. But I'm
right.
Coming right around 600 grains overall.
Yeah, that sounds pretty.
Yeah, so, I mean, I do have, you know, 250 grains up front, and I think my FOC is like 17% or something like that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it performed really well. I am shooting 45 pounds. I don't think I've said that yet. And like I said, I mean, it performed really well on that longbow. You know, it's the Black Hunter. But that's 45 pounds at 28 inches. My draw is a little bit longer than that. You know, I'm a 29-inch draw. So I'm probably shooting, you know, 47, 48 pounds with that. And then that recurve that I'm switching to this year, it's a 48 pound recurve, so realistically I'm probably what, 50-51 pounds.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that's pretty again, you got a pretty good power stroke on that thing too, so
yeah.
Yeah, just for shits and giggles here, so I'm weighing these things, right? So I got one Swamp Shark here that doesn't have a whole lot of sharpening to it at like 190, and then I got another one that's closer to like 180-ish or something like that here that's been kind of sharpened down and shot a bunch, you know. So it's one of those things where, like, you know, it kind of goes to show you where if you got something tuned and it works for you, right, and you don't actually know, like, the real numbers behind it, but you think you do, and then you find out, like, oh, this is totally different, you know, does that change your mind, like, oh, maybe I should, you know, add weight or not, you know, it shouldn't, because if it's working for you, you know, the number could say 300, you know,
right.
It is what it is. So I just think that's kind of funny. So, yeah, so you got a pretty, I mean, that's a pretty heavy arrow setup, but I mean, who cares?
Yeah. You know, I mean, as long as it hits where I'm aiming and, you know, puts animals on the ground, that's all I want, you know.
I'm constantly trying to, like, fine tune, you know, my arrow setup on this, especially this ASL, and I keep going like heavier and heavier, not because I want to hit a certain weight or a certain FOC, but I end up with a arrow that I'm looking at now. I end up with like an arrow that it's like, oh man, you know, if I'm the better my form gets, the better everything gets, you know, the stuff changes. And then all of a sudden I'll be like, oh, well, I'm shooting a little weak or I'm shooting a little stiff. And you find out more, like the better you shoot, if you find out like, oh, the arrow's actually doing this, right? It's closer to what like a perfect arrow would be. And I just keep adding weight to the thing because it's like, oh, I thought I was shooting fine, but now it's like I'm shooting quite stiff. Yes. And then I'll just keep adding like, you know, tip weight kind of thing, to the point where it's like now one of these weighs like 650 grains and I'm only like 44 pounds.
Yeah.
On the thing, you know what I mean? But I don't care. I mean, like 20 yards is like a long poke for me, you know. I mean, I can do it, but you know, I like the whole, you know, I practice, you know, at the 15 and, you know, 15 and in and that kind of thing. So at those distances, it's like, you know, it's a horse apiece. So
yeah, that would be a pretty far, you know, poke. I mean, not to say, you know, you couldn't or I couldn't do it, but you know, I like that 10 to 15 yards, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty sweet. All right, man. So if, people want to follow you, where do they follow you?
The best spot for most of my content is going to be on YouTube. So they can just go to YouTube and look up Hunting the Missouri. You know, probably the easiest way, cause there's just so much content within Missouri that, you know, people put kind of close to that. You can just put Hunting the Missouri and then just type Ryan Lehman. That's RyanLeaman. So, you know, that way they can go straight to my channel, on there. If they go in the bio, it'll actually have a link. I do have a Facebook, and there's like a Hunting the Missouri link on Facebook. And then I have a Go Wild page as well. I'm not sure if you're on there, if you've heard about
it. I'm not. No, that's that app, right?
Yeah, there is an app. I really like it a lot, you know, better than Instagram or any of that stuff. But it's basically just a hunting and fishing app, and you can go in on your trails or whatever, and you can just, if you only want to see fishing, that's what you see. If you just want to see bear hunting, that's what you see. If you just want to see deer hunting or trail cameras, so you can go in and really fine tune exactly what you want. That way you're not seeing what everybody's going to eat tonight, you know?
Right.
So, but yeah, that would be the main places would be either, you know, the main one would be YouTube and then Facebook and Go Wild. So.
Cool. Well, listen, I like all the stuff you're putting out. Good content. And I want to see more, obviously, because like I said, I consume all that stuff. So selfishly, I want people to film more, you know. So, keep it up there. I'm definitely going to. So everybody, go follow Ryan. Go follow his YouTube channel, all that stuff. If you like this episode, obviously leave a rating, super important, right? Go to Apple Podcasts. That's like the biggie. You know, I think we're all kind of savvy enough with our phones to kind of figure out how to do it. Everyone asks how to do it. Everyone's phone looks a little bit different when they do it, but it really, really helps a lot. YouTube, go check out the YouTube channel, Bowhunting Soul as well. And, all those other things we've got, you know, links to like the push courses and things like that out there, and you know, they're definitely worth checking out. So all right, Ryan, hold on with me here while we wrap up. So everybody, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you guys next time.